Welcome to the Educause podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Real Networks and features a session from the Educause 2008 annual conference presented by Bart Vendelaar, project manager of the University of Groningen, and Ingeborg Veldman, web editor at the University of Groningen. The session is entitled Science Links, Linking the Virtual to the Physical in Enrollment Management.
Very nice to have you down here. We have a presentation, a session on what we have built for our faculty to get students in. That's kind of what we have done. That's a problem that's quite specific for science and technology over in Europe, and especially for the public universities. How many of you work for public universities? Good enough. And how many for private universities? Okay. Well, in the Netherlands we've got 14 universities, and all of them are public. There's, I think, one other privately owned university, but the only field it offers is business administration. That's no surprise, I think. I will be doing this session together with my colleague, Ingeborg Veldman. We are from the University of Groningen. Anybody has ever been to Groningen? Yeah. Oh, that's enough. Okay. So we've got the Netherlands, we've got the North Sea at your left-hand side, Germany on your right-hand side, Belgium on the bottom. And when you swim for a couple of hours, you'll find UK somewhere down here. We've got a problem in science and technology. And the basic idea is that when you try something like this, that's a pickle, as you can see. What's going to happen? Nobody knows? Not real scientists, then. Hey, you got a light bulb. Just an ordinary pickle. Let's try it with pickled herring. You go for the challenge. What do you think is going to happen? It's just two nails connected to current. Well, that's a negative result.
That is also a result.
We don't give up. One more try. Hooray. Well, that's fun, isn't it? Say yes. Thank you. Nice audience. But the general image of science and technology is this. Two old men saying things to each other no one understands. They're very passionate about what they do, but who cares? Meanwhile, in Brussels, we've got the Lisbon Declaration. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Lisbon Declaration. A That's three. Oh, right. Okay. All the people who've been to Groningen are familiar with the Lisbon Declaration. Okay. It says that Europe should be more competitive and should invest in a knowledge-intensive economy. But down in the Netherlands, we are not that good in science and technology. At least, well, we are very good in science and technology, but it's not very popular because of the bleak image, as I just presented. Well, you see this, this is the percentage of science and technology students in our first year enrollment, and it's the comparison between a number of countries in Europe. The black line going down, that's the Netherlands. So something like 17% of first year students in the Netherlands, they make a pick for a science and technology study or program. And the other ones, they go for whatever, arts, social sciences. When you compare it, for example, with Italy, which is this line, or Germany, even doing better, that's something else. And when you want to invest in a knowledge-intensive economy, you need science and technology students. So we've got a problem. So lots of activities the last couple of years trying to market science and technology. With quite some success. In the last 7 or 8 years, the numbers of science and technology students have gone up for all Dutch universities together from 8,000 to 11,000, well, almost 12,000. That's an increase of 37%, which is quite something. University of Groningen doubled its student numbers in science and technology, which, our ministry is very happy with it. Selected us a national good practice. And just for comparison, the Technical University of Delft, they have the biggest amount of students, of course, because it is dedicated to technology. While at University of Groningen, we also offer arts and social sciences and whatever, all kinds of programs. But still, the Dutch colleges or universities for applied sciences, they do not that good. There's a small decrease the last couple of years. So apparently universities, research universities, they have found their way to market science and technology. We do a lot of things. My faculty, for example, has got a teachers network in which we have school teachers come to our faculty to work on teaching materials. We've got a question and answer service for secondary school pupils who want to know something about science and technology. They can send us an email, and when they want to build their own experiments, they can come over to our faculty, to the laboratories. We've got a science truck. You see it up there? Science truck has got something like 50,000 pupils as a guest the last couple of years. And we've got science links. Because as a faculty, we do so much, and each and every department has got its own ideas. Sometimes graduates going back to their old school and doing some kind of a lecture, master classes, all sorts of things. Schools don't know what's happening because there's so much, they don't have an overview. The university itself has built a network for lectures on request, for example. It's the Scholieren Academie, which means as much as the Pupils Academy. So our mission was to make sure that we market science and technology, but trying to build more some kind of a hole out of it, and to also use the possibilities of new technologies, because what you find here, it's all quite traditional. That's what we do it for. Increasing student enrollment, combining everything we already have, exploring new media, and bringing about an attitude change, because we do not so much want to learn students something. We want to try to promote science and technology programs. So it's about an attitude change, and how can you see or measure an attitude change by their change in study choice. General idea was to make our faculty, the Faculty of Mathematics and Natural Sciences, more transparent. How do we do that? By showing people, not by showing subjects, but by showing people who are passionate about what they do. Show them what kind of programs there are, because there is this general idea about science and technology being boring and being difficult and hard. And not only that, it's also you find a job with it that nobody wants. So we also have to offer science career role models. People, again. When you are going for communication and change, we try to find some kind of a theoretical basis for what we do. A very simple idea for communication studies is you've got a sender, a receiver, and you've got a message. Of course, this is kind of old-fashioned, but we try to learn a little bit about this. But of course, there is not a passive receiver. It's not just like someone who is there waiting for your message. It's someone who is actually building meaning out of what someone else says. Communication itself is not isolated, it's always embedded, of course, because we are talking about social systems. And there's never one sender, there's always a mix of senders. So it's quite a messy situation in which you try to bring about some kind of an attitude change. For the receiver itself, there is not a message, there is information, but this information is meaningless until the receiver himself or herself builds meaning. So that makes it a construct. And also the receiver is part of a social network. He is not on his own. For pupils, there are friends, there are fathers and mothers also influencing them. So what does that learn us for Science Links? We have to address visitors with different interests, taking them seriously. We've got to address these visitors in each and every possible way. That means different subject matters, but also different learning styles. Whatever we do, we should not do it once. We should build a relationship over time, really try to involve young people with the work of our faculty, and make them an active participant. For receivers, it's kind of the same. Next to this signal, there are other unintentional signals, because it's what I just said, a kind of a messy situation. There's not a message, but a construct. What does this learn us for Science Links? We should, in each and every way, try to involve our target group, leaving visitors room for interpretation and learning. Have to address pupils as well as their peer groups. And involve them, give them an active involvement. What does our target group look like then? What are the motives for them to make a choice for their study? We try to understand it by dividing them according to two axes. One One is about their drive, whether it is internal or external. The other one is about their future or present orientation. So when you try to understand what people, what drives people when they make these kind of future choices, you have to know in what quarter they should fit. And these quarters can be described by one question. What can I do for this one? What can I become for the ones who are future-oriented and have an external drive? So what kind of a job can I do later on? What can I learn for the ones who've got an internal drive and are very much oriented towards learning? What can I mean? People who are looking for some kind of a relevant activity. There's been an inquiry, a web inquiry, quite massive, and then we found these groups, what we called hands-on, science and technology students, the ones who, when their iPod breaks up, they try to fix it. Not buy a new one, but try to fix it. The ones, you can find these kind of students, for example, in applied physics. It's a typical hands-on student. Not interested in jobs, but interested in what he does right now. You can find a generic S&T student, usually in life sciences and biology. They want to do something meaningful. You can find a career science and technology student, for example, in pharmacy. The ones who really have a picture of what they want to become and want to do a study because of the job opportunities. Industrial engineering and management. That's also a study program for these kind of students. And as a rest group, the non-students, the non-science and technology students, of course. So what we tried to do was build a network between research and schools and corporations. Research, as it is represented in our faculty by a number of institutes, everything you can imagine in science and technology is covered by my faculty, from nanotechnology up to computing science. We've built connections with schools. We've got something like 50 teachers of 25 schools come over to our faculty every month to work on teaching materials. And we got the corporations, because of course that's where they will find their jobs. And how do we do this? First, and that's particularly the job of our discovery truck, our science truck, as I just showed you. We visit schools and try to support pupils in their choice of profiles. In Dutch high schools, you've got 4 different profiles before you continue: on nature and technology, nature and health, economics and society, and culture and society. Almost half of the pupils makes their choice for one of these 2 nature profiles. And then, the years after that, we try to support students in the choice of a study for life sciences, science and technology, or computer science, as we offer all these programs within our faculty. Next is, how can we, this abundance of activities, give one central identity? So 101 equals 1, because it's recognizable. We have this new building, it opened this spring, and that offered the possibility to build an actual science center. Right there in the entrance. We build exhibits on each and every possible subject that is covered by our research department. New building, new exhibits, everything, well, very attractive. But 101 also equals 3, of course, because we want to have a whole that is bigger than the sum of its parts. Using new technologies, connecting physical exhibits with virtual exhibits, an extensive website in which each and every physical exhibit, as I just showed on the picture, is represented online with teaching materials and games and all stuff. Right now, Ingeborg will tell you a couple of examples on how we connected subjects, how we connected the physical and the virtual aspects for each individual subject. We did this according to a number of principles. Content first, because it are science and technology students. The very first motive for them to make a choice for a study program is the subject matter, always. When you are in doubt about what to do, you are not going for applied physics. No way. Nobody. But these young people, they have their differences. We try to address those differences with formal as well as informal learning in the class and also out of the class. For example, out of the class, this science center, they can visit it. They can come to science cafes, they can come to science theater, whatever. Also in class, because, well, young kids, they have a busy life. You don't want to bother them with all these things when they are off. Blended learning activities. And also make clear for them that science and technology is not that boring. We've got a lot of time and money invested in graphic design, in the furniture design itself within the science center, the architecture, just to show science and technology is something of this very moment and the future. It's not something something from years ago. And the last set of didactic principles is about self-directed learning. Each and every pupil is addressed as if he is a thinking human being, not just a sheep in the flock, but he is invited to do his own research. That's what we want. We want to build bridges between pupils and researchers and invite pupils to do their own research. How do we do that? Well, there's a number of... I forgot the microphone.
Just one moment. Okay. As Bart told us right before, I'm going to show you some concrete examples of how we implement those didactical principles. So let's start with my PowerPoint. First a little bit about myself. I have an art historian background, so a great example, I think, to show that I also got inspired by beta studies. So it's really not that boring. I always thought so, but it really came to life for me when I came to the faculty and I got a chance over there to think about how you can relate a physical exhibition, a science center, with all kinds of virtual things. So we have built up a virtual exhibition actually, and we try to make use of emerging technologies. And also with my background as art historian, mainly focused on visual aspects of art, also is very handy for within this project, because we want to inspire pupils and also want to visualize all those complex subjects that playing major roles in the Faculty of Mathematics and Technology. So this is the front page of our website. You can see it's now kind of static because that's more reliable within this setting. But it's actually a flash structure. It's a kind of plant with in the middle you have some branches with associative terms, and we want to trigger pupils for certain subjects, but we don't want to confront them immediately with the structure of the traditional structure of the faculty. So by presenting those associative terms, they can with their own mindset can figure out, hey, what's behind that? And we want to challenge them to explore. That's the main thought behind this this way of presenting the content of the website. So I'm going to show you three examples, because there are a lot of colored bulbs and I've chosen three good examples. The first one is about carbon dioxide, the second one about DNA, and the third one about observing technologies, of observing techniques. So that's about astronomy, but also in medical sciences, you need different observing techniques. The school carbon dioxide web project is integrated within the Science Links structure. It's a project where you can actually see how a physical measurement of carbon dioxide in the air also is connected with a virtual applet. So pupils can physically investigate the subjects within classrooms, but also on the roofs of schools. There are measurement systems to actually measure carbon dioxide, and they do all kinds of experiments in classrooms, and everything is connected to the virtual by this applet. So all the data is streamed to a huge database, and so all those different schools that are connected to this project, all pupils can also see it online, and they can analyze the data sets and also use those data sets again for their profile essays. Every pupil has to write, do kind of research. So I will show you how it works. So here you can choose for air pressure or temperature or wind or carbon dioxide, the concentration of that in the air. And over here you see the different schools who already have done measurements, and those data sets are really streamed to the database. So I'll give a short example. I'm not really into the deeper thoughts of this subject. You can imagine, because I'm art historian, but you can choose for one of the schools or two, and then you can choose for which week. You can from 5 till 11 October, and then you can draw a graphic out of it, but not today, but normally, as you saw on the screenshot just before, you see a visual way of those graphical visualization of the data, and of course you can also download it, and that gives a lot of opportunities. And also, it's a great example in which you can see that pupils, I'm sorry, I always confuse those terms, but they making part of the network, and they make a contribution of, they actually doing research, and also are connected to scientists of our faculty who are doing also research on the subject. So that's a way in which they can get to notice how it is to be a scientist, and that's really a great learning experience, and also to build a bridge between secondary school and university. It's a nice way of doing that. So the goals of this project are to give pupils more insight in the carbon cycle and the fluctuations of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. But also they learn how to analyze data sets and using spreadsheets and statistics. So you already feel that it's very multidisciplinary. So physics, biology, mathematics and earth sciences all come together in this kind of project. And something about the project is that it is already a network of 20 schools, and because we make everything freely available, you see that it is growing, so that's a very good sign. And since April 2007, this project is also makes part of the teacher-scientist partnerships project. And that's also about let pupils involve in the faculty science setting. The carbon dioxide web project also takes part in the European project Carbo Schools. So you can also see that it is the network is even larger than what I've just explained. It's also internationally a hot item, and very important that more pupils get to know the subject better and doing research on that. So that's about climate change, the subject. The second example is about all about DNA. Well, a little impression for you. This is a classroom setting. It takes part of the first subject, of course. Measuring photosynthesis in a classroom setting. So the second subject about DNA. Again, you see a triggering term, I gene, so I am. So it's very, you can have more different thoughts around that catchy sentence. So when you choose this branch, it's alive. You can read it over there. And then for I gene, so I am, then you come in on the exhibit page. That's how we call it. And then you are confronted with a lot of visual material. And also with a sort of storyline to get really into the subject. So we want to connect the difficult subject with the context of pupils. So we try to also build bridges using text and visual material. So the text starts with, what if there comes a second era of extreme coldness or glaciation? Will you put on more clothes or isolate your homes, build cozy fireplaces, or build up more fat reserves to build a kind of extra skin around you to keep warm? And then it goes further, and the question is but what if we could actually manipulate our DNA? So then you get into the subject. So what if you could create your own fur, as you can see on the left, and on the right a little bit of DNA structure. So yeah, to get a little bit into the subject, on the website we have chosen to keep the text very short, in short blocks, because yeah, everybody knows you are confronted with so much media information. It's yeah, too much. So we've chosen for short text with image material that also explains the subject like a kind of comic strip. So if you only, if you are very visually oriented, then you go for the images and you also get into the subject. So there are different ways of getting into the subject. Well, this belongs to yeah, everything concerning molecular genetics. We have built also a game. It's called Cell Matters, in which you are a little bacteria, yeah, this little animal right over there. Yeah, exploring a virtual world, which is constantly changing, and the bacteria has to yeah, get over how you say that, to pass certain obstacles, and as bacteria you are that little creature, you have to collect amino acids which you can find in that virtual world, and those items you can you see it on the right side, it's kind of genetic material. You can adjust your bodily features, so you can come, you can go faster, or you can come stronger, that kind of features. So in that way you can survive all those obstacles, and well, that's a really informal way to explore all things about DNA, and yeah, that's a nice example of what we do within Science Links, to combine informal ways, gameplay with a little bit of educational value, of course. And this was really the pilot for us, because how do you build a good serious game? So we worked together with art and new media students, and they worked together with scientists of our faculty. So that was a really nice, they gave input. You get me, I think. But yeah, if you see the result, maybe you think, oh, well, I had expected more educational value, but it's really, that's really difficult to find the right balance. But we actually succeeded with this project. Yeah, to also have informal ways of showing the content, and yeah, together with those formal activities that we built around that, yeah, it's a really nice way to get into all about DNA. And so in the physical exhibition we have an interactive exhibit. That's the so-called the Wheel of Ribosomes. It's always difficult to translate those Dutch titles. But in here, in short, you have to create the right code for RNA, copy of DNA, and in that way, scholars learn how amino acids, if you put them together, you can create proteins, and those proteins, they are responsible for certain functions in your cells, in your so that's also a really nice way because you have to compete with your classmates, and you you have to you see it on the right side. You have to turn those three wheels, and it's a little bit also about chance, of course. But yeah, it's really a nice exhibit. And I'll show you also a little impression of over here. This is actually a researcher on that molecular genetics. Oscar Kuipers is his name. And these movies combined with games and formal ways of presenting the subjects, these particular movies show really what's the passion of a scientist to do this kind of research. What are these people like? And they show things of their environment to make it more, to try to work on that negative image that pupils have of scientists. So the last subject is about observing techniques. I just said about astronomy mainly, and here I have to make it a little bit shorter. How do you investigate something that is really big, far away, invisible for you? You make use of different observing technologies. They can be a solution for that. And in the text, in the text you've already seen it at the subject before this one. How that is presented, but in here we have an application called Black Holes website, Gravity's Relentless Pull, in which you actually can explore space and by different observing techniques. And so that's a really nice way of doing this all virtual. So you can explore different planets, and with visible light or X-ray or infrared. So that's the idea in short. And in the exhibition, there's also an exhibit about this subject, of course. And you look in that black box, and you get to know the different observing techniques. You see animations of a face, and with those different observing techniques, and you get the idea that when you combine those different observing techniques, you get the total image. So this is the example of that, X-ray and infrared. And over here you see that we have on our faculty building an observatory where pupils get have the chance to actually look at stars, and we organize special night shows, you can call it night shows, I think. And look at the stars, so also very physical again. And we've also have won the academic prize of the year, it's called, the Battle of Universities in 2008. And with that project, we have the chance to focus on infrared observing techniques. And the RUG, the discovery truck of our university, is focusing on that item and shows main public, but also pupils at schools, all about the subjects. And also there will be a photo contest, so everybody can send in their beautiful pictures, infrared pictures of the beautiful universe, of the sky, of the planets, and then there will be a Mr. and Mrs. Infrared Universe. And in Science Center Nemo, and also in one of our edit rooms, we are going to show those beautiful pictures. And so that's also a really nice way of science communication. I hope that you have now a better idea of how we really implement those didactic principles. So content first, thinking from subjects, that's very important. Different learning styles, blended learning, using virtual and physical, trying to inspire the next generation, what is really, it is a real hard task, of course, because they are confronted with so much information. Formal and informal, and also invite their own creativity and associative thinking, and get to involve them. So that's about our presentation. And we have thought about some issues for discussion. Hopefully you can do something with this. How can you involve pupils, faculty and professionals in science and technology? Are there more ways of using technologies? Maybe you have your own experience with some technologies or can give other examples. We are very curious about that, so, okay.
This EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference podcast is sponsored by Real Networks. Stream multi-format audio and video to PCs and mobile devices with Helix Server from Real. Information at realnetworks.com.